यथा शक्यदना चांत नमन्मोहाब्द्रिये नमः अनन्तानन्द कृष्णाय जगन्मङ्गलमूर्तये. स्वरूपम् एव मे सत्त्वम् स्वरूपमेव मे सत्त्वम् नति धर्मौ नभस्त्ववत् नति धर्मौ नभस्त्ववत् मदन्यस्य सतो भावात् मदन्यस्य सतो भावात् न हि सज्जातिरिष्यते न हि सज्जातिरिष्यते. स्वरूपम् एव मे सत्त्वम् स्वरूपम् एव मे सत्त्वम् न तु धर्मौ नभस्त्ववत् न तु धर्मौ नभस्त्ववत् मदन्यस्य सतो भावात् मदन्यस्य सतो भावात् न हि सज्जातिरिष्यते न हि सज्जातिरिष्यते. स्वरूपम् एव मे सत्त्वम् न तु धर्मो नभस्त्ववत् मत् अन्यस्य मद इट्स् अ कम्पौण्ड् मत् अन्यस्य मदन्यस्य सतः अभावात् न हि सत् जातिः इष्यते. Swarupam, nominative, neuter nominative, singular. Swarupa means one's own nature, swa, one's own, rupa. Rupa you often do as form, but also a lot of times nature is appropriate. So when we say swarupam, we don't say one's own form. We'll say nama rupa, then rupa is form, name, form, nama rupa. But swarupam is nature. And a lot of times when a compound ends in rupa, the meaning, the sense is nature. So swarupam, one's own nature, eva indeed. Me, my, sattvam. So me sattvam. My sattvam is the sat chit ananda, the sat my being. Right? My sattvam, my being, my existence, the existence. Me sattvam, my existence. Swarupam eva me sattvam. This existence, my existence, is swarupa, is my swarupa. Or you could say like this, it's not quite how they take it in here, but you could say either way, he takes it like this. He takes the me to go with the sattva. But it could be either way, the existence, or me sattvam, both in neuter swarupam sattvam, me sattvam, my being, my existence, is swarupa, is my own nature. It's my nature. We'll see what the different distinction here. But so my swarupa, my sattva, my existence, my being is this is my swarupa, right? My being is my swarupa. Swa is the my. Is my swarupa. Is my own nature. My being is my own nature. Natu, but not. Dharmaha, not, but is not dharma. It is the sattva is me. It's not a quality of me. It's not one of my attributes. So here you can take dharma as the attribute where you have the substantive and then the attributes that the substantive has. Like say you have a pot and it has a dharma. It's a blue pot. So here, or it's a red pot. That becomes an attribute of something else, right? Something that attribute is dependent upon something else. When we say, so when you say it's not my dharma, it's not one of my qualities. So dharma here means attribute or quality. It's not a quality. It's who I am, right? It's the substantive. It's not an attribute of a different substantive. So you see it? Then they give the example, nebestwa vat. Vat is the indeclinable that means like. Like spaceness. Nebus is space. Also kind of can mean air and other things, but here it's being used, nebus as akasha. But what it literally says is like spaceness. The idea is like the spaceness of space. Space itself does not, well, we'll get to the jati.
What was that?
That was the currency dropping.
Oh. That's all right. It's not
what,
Tibby.
What?
Nebus. If you're worried about it, you can go check, but I think it's just the seed drop. It's fine. Nebus. Nebus means space. Nebus twa, that's the abstract. Space-ness, like nebus ta, nebus twa. Okay? But like spaceness. What they're saying is, spaceness is not an attribute of space, right? Spaceness is space. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So, swadu?
Spaceness is... Could you say it one more time?
We're looking at the difference between something being a quality. Like, say, if you take this, your existence. Is your being an attribute? Is it dependent on, for instance, the body? You know, is your being dependent as an attribute, as a quality of something else? If it were dependent as a quality of something else, then when that something else goes, existence goes, right? So, for instance, if your beingness, your isness, your very existence is a dharma or an attribute of something which is itself time-bound, then when the substantive goes away, like this body is time-bound, if the existence is a quality of the body, then when the body goes, then its dharmas go. So if existence is dependent upon the body, if the body dies, existence dies, right? But if existence is not an attribute, but is in fact the very substantive, right, then it's not a dharma of something else. If it's a dharma of something else, then immediately you have to recognize, immediately you have duality also, right? Because there's a distinction between the dharma, between the attribute and the substantive, and the attribute depends upon the substantive. So you've got two, right? And if you've got two, then you're within mithya, you're within samsara, and you're within time and space. All of these things come up. But let's finish this. So in any case, nebus. Nebus means space. So then when we say, is the spaceness of space an attribute of space? And we say, no, the spaceness of space is the space. It's not an attribute. We'll see in a minute how space is, of the space, air, fire, water, earth, space is the closest adrishtanta for Brahman. I'll get into that when we get into jati. Okay? So, like the spaceness. So it doesn't say like the spaceness of space. You have to infer that because we're here where it says the existence is my swarupa alone, it's not a dharma. Like the spaceness of space is its swarupa alone, it's not a dharma. It's not a quality. Okay? Then, mud anyasya. Now, mud means me. So mud anya is common when you have that anya at the end, other than me. Anya itself means other or another. So madanyasya, other than me. So that would be mat anyasya, other than me. Sataha. Now, sataha is in the genitive. Madanyasya is in the genitive. Sataha from sat means being, existence. So abhavat, because of the abhava, the non-existence, right? Because of the non-existence of sat, of a sat, of existence other than me. So you could say, because there is no existence other than me, right? But literally, fifth case of abhavat, fifth case in the sense of because of, right? Because of the abhava of sat, Because the abhava of an existence which is other than me. There are two existences. Okay. Mad anyasya sattaha abhavat. Everybody see?
Mm-hmm.
Nahi sa jatihi ishyate. So here we say, sa jatihi, indeed, he indeed, na, there is no jati. A jati is not, it really means is not desirable, but it can be there is no such thing as a jati. A jati cannot be, you can't accept a jati. You can't accept another jati, because indeed there is no other jati.
What's jati?
Jati means, is like a species, or in set theory, it's a set.
Oh, so, a caste or something.
Yeah, well, you could say jati or caste, but no, it really means it's much more general than that. Like you say, a jati is any species. Mm-hmm. And of course, there can be species within species. You know, but say you have cats, dogs, stones. Then you can have different types of stones. So they're collections of likes. So, for instance, you could have, like in terms of the body, there are many bodies. The physical body belongs, the human physical body belongs to the jati of human physical bodies. Right, the antakarna belongs to the jati. The jati of antakarnas. There are many, many different antakarnas. There's a whole jati of antakarnas. So they mean sets or groups of things, or in English, you know, in science we use it as species. All of the different species.
Is it like a gana?
A gana is a group. As long as you're using gana, gana has a lot of meanings. But if you're using a gana as group, then yeah. Okay. So it says, Nahi sa jatihi ishyate na ishyate. Let me see how they do the ishyate. There's a special word I'm looking for here.
This is around identifying with existence versus having existence.
Yes, exactly. That's it. Sorry, I'm just, a word is eluding me and I want to find it. Just take me a minute. This is the closest, this word is still eluding me, but this is the sense. Ish in the passive, one of its meanings, you know, ish means to desire, you know, what are some of the common meanings, to wish, desire, long for. And so we usually think of that meaning, but often when it's used in the passive, it's commonly used in this sense, like to be approved, accepted, or regarded as, you know. And so, I think of the word, that definition is good enough. We say, in jatihi is the feminine, so that can't be taken as a jati. That is not a jati. That is not acceptable as a jati, right? Because of there not being sat for anything other than me, it itself can't be a jati, right? That cannot be a jati. Existence itself, sa jatihi ishyate. That cannot be regarded. That's good. That cannot be regarded as a jati, as a species. As the existence is, like say you have, you know, cats, dogs, humans, and existence. as though existence were one of the things, right? So if it's not one of the things, then there's no objectification of it. Okay? So that's what we have to get. Everybody see?
Yeah.
See the negative? Nahi, he is indeed there. Mm-hmm. Sa jatihi. That cannot be accepted as a jati.
Is the said jati sa?
Sa is feminine, because I think jati is feminine. Oh. Otherwise, there's no reason for the sa. Okay.
It's such here, right?
They just have such.
Sa jati.
Oh, this version is sa jati. Oh. It doesn't work that well. Sa yes, jati yes. is much better. Okay. It's much more clear. If you have sa jati,
yeah.
Otherwise, you have to take the sa with. Yeah, that's much better. Then that would say much more clearly, sat cannot be regarded. Mm-hmm. Sat cannot be regarded as a jati. You have a different version. You know. This one's much better. Sat, nominative singular, jati. Sat cannot be, indeed, sat cannot be regarded as a jati. If it's a jati, it can be differentiated from something else. Okay.
Ishate is passive.
Yeah, ishate is passive. Yeah.
And when you're given the definition of your own nature as existence,
mm-hmm.
How exactly do you experience that? I mean, how do you see? Because existence, huh?
Why don't you wait till I unfold it?
Oh, okay.
And then you can ask.
Yeah.
Yes.
Recognition of death.
Mm-hmm. Let's wait till I. Yeah. Can I get into the verse? Let's wait a little bit. Then if I don't answer it, then you can all ask. Srupameva me satvam natudanamo bhavas nabas tvavat maranyasya sato bhavat nahi sa jati rishyate. Okay, there's some different little prakriyas here. I'll just try to go through some of them that are important here. Existence, your being, your isness, your amness, is for each one of us a common denominator. In other words, I am, I am, I am, I am. Also in reference to the creation, it is, it is, it is, it is. The being of everything is something that, in fact, we don't think of it like this, but in fact, is a common denominator. You assume it. As long as you experience something, you assume its being. Because you're experiencing it, it is here. And so, because we haven't differentiated being from our experience, right, everything gets being. Everything gets existence. Because there is no experience that's devoid of or separate from existence, right? It would be like saying, if you have if I have a clay, a fresco, you know, what's that called, a bas relief of clay? Like if you have a big chunk of clay and then carved into it is a scene. Everything gets the clay, right? But unless the clay has been differentiated from the namarupa, the names and forms, we just say, this is clay, this is clay, this is clay, this is clay, right? Like that I say, this is, this is, this is, this is, this is, because in fact it is. That's the satyam mitya that has to be understood. You're absolutely correct in saying that it is, it is, it is, it is. You can even say the swarupa, the isness, is not away from, separate from, or other than anything that you experience. And in fact, you can't have an experience without it enjoying being. But so the thing is, we haven't differentiated the being from the experience. And that differentiation has to take place because, in fact, we can point out that everything comes and goes in being, you know? Everything comes and goes in being. Being is the changeless invariable, you know? Sometimes when Swamiji is using breaking down the clay pot into shards, one thing to understand in making that differentiation is just in your own experience. When he uses the clay pot, he'll say something. This is using the clay pot in a different way. If you say this object, clay pot, is, but if you break it into shards, there is no variation in the experience of being. There's only a variation in the experience of nama-rupa, of the name and form. So you don't have, when you break something like a pot into shards, of course the nama-rupa has totally changed. But in that whole process, there hasn't been any change in being, only in nama-rupa. Right? You can experience the same thing in your own being when you wake up from a dream. There's no change at all. There's not the slightest variation in being. That's why the feeling is, because the dream or the imagination or any experience, you know, is being. But the being is not dependent upon the experience. If the being is not dependent on the experience, then you can watch the experiences coming and going, and something as drastic for you as the dream, from dream to waking, where you actually are identified within the dream, or you're identified with a character within the dream. And so when that character goes, you should go, right? You should have an experience of going, but there is no such experience. That's why you can feel, when I go from waking to dream, I'm from dream to waking, that actually, in spite of that dream universe disappearing, nothing has happened. And why we can say nothing has happened is because, in fact, nothing has happened. Because there is, between satyam and mithya, there is no distance. If there's a satyam-mithya relationship, in fact, there is only one thing there. See that? If the satya-mithya relationship, there's only one thing there. And so if that means the mithya, whatever is mithya, is totally dependent upon satyam, and even if that language is not right, if we say the mithya is totally dependent on satyam, that's true. We're speaking from the standpoint of the mithya, though. Mm-hmm. Because actually, there is no second thing there for there even to be something dependent upon something else. But because, like, there is no anything there but clay, for to say that the pot is dependent on clay, you know, it's not like when we use the term adhishtana as the basis for something. If I take a clay pot and put it on the table, you know, the table acts as the adhishtana, as the basis, the support for the clay pot. But if I'm using adhishtana, this basis, in reference to mithya, here then the adhishtana, what we mean by that, is that without which the mithya cannot be, without which the whatever the mithya form is cannot exist. The adhishtana is that which the mithya is totally dependent upon for its being. And so when we start, we have to start from our standpoint of being nama-rupa, of being name within name within name within name. I'm this body, I'm this physical complex, I'm the body, mind, sense organs. You know, this is all mithya. And so what has to happen is we have to, accepting this mithya, recognize what its essence is, taking the mithya to the sat-chit, really. And then we can eventually see that really there is nothing here but sat, there is nothing here but consciousness. But you have to start with this kind of a duality, you know? Like this body is, this mind is, the sense organs is, you are, everything is, you know? But then, and all of this is dependent, so this is the different layers of teaching, all of this that we experience is dependent upon being. You could say, just like the pot is dependent upon clay. If I say this whole experience that you have, this whole universe is totally dependent on sat, existence, just like the pot is dependent upon clay, the first thing you'll say, yeah, there can't be a pot without clay. That's the first thing in your mind. That's true. There can be no pot without clay. But the second step is, well, actually there's nothing here but clay. That needs to be understood, to really understand mithya. That's why Swamiji will say, mithya can't be categorized as either sat or asat, as either real or unreal. It has no category because it's not a thing. Mithya or Maya, which enjoys this order of reality of mithya, it's not a thing to be categorized because it has no separate being, right? And so here he's starting out making this very kind of important distinction. Is my swarupa, is my existence, is my being, you know, is it dependent of, is it a quality, is it an attribute which is dependent upon something? If it's an attribute dependent upon something, then it's a product. It's something that exists within duality, right? If it's not an attribute, but is its own being, right? Then there's no what we call vishesha, vishesha. Vishesha means the attribute. Vishesha means the thing which is holding the attribute. There's not this type of a duality between the substantive vishesha, the thing that is qualified, and the vishesha, the qualifier. So here, like if I say this body is alive, it exists, and then I say the dead body doesn't exist, you know? The dead body doesn't enjoy existence. It does enjoy. The dead body does enjoy existence, right? But if I say, here, I exist as long as there's this body. My whole being is dependent upon this body. That's the vishesha. This body becomes the vishesha. So is my being like that? Is it a vishesha upon a substantive? When we think of, like, if you go to the clay pot, the pot may think that its being is dependent upon the pot, right? Because the pot is what it takes itself to be, and then the clayness of the pot belongs to the pot. So like that, the being that I am, me, which is my truth, it belongs to the body, mind, sense organs. My being is an attribute of this. That is the confusion. That's, you know, and it's a natural confusion, right? Because there is no separating being from this body, mind, sense organ. So this body enjoys being, nor is there a separation of being from anything in the creation. So this enjoys being, this enjoys being, this enjoys being. Everything in the creation enjoys being. And so it's naturally superimposed upon everything that we perceive. And everything that we perceive also enjoys non-being. See that? Everything that we perceive can come from non-being and go into non-being. Let me explain. From the standpoint of ajnanam. Like, say, if I have a clay pot, the clay pot is, but when the clay pot is broken into shards, the clay pot is not, right? And so the clay pot has lost its being, hasn't it? The pot has lost its being, but the shards now have being, right? And so now the shards enjoy being, but the pot is non-existent now. So we have this going into existence and going out of existence from the standpoint of everything within the creation. So what does that mean? I am coming into existence and going out of existence. My thoughts come into existence, go out of existence. And since I have totally superimposed existence onto the object, whatever it is, I come into existence, and I've superimposed being onto the upadi. I come into existence and go out of existence just like everything else does. That's the problem. And so here I have to be able to differentiate that and realize that, in a way you can say, Swamiji will say like this sometimes, the existence of being is the noun. It's the substantive, not the attribute. If it's the substantive, then he'll say, all of these things are as though attributes of being. So we would say like lamp being, chair being, human body being, space being. The one thing that remains the same is being. And these are like mitya, attributes of being. Not that being is an attribute of these things. If being is an attribute of these things, when these things die, being dies. And you can see from the standpoint of a jiva how that is a reasonable conclusion. It's a reasonable conclusion because for us, everything in the creation comes into being and out of being. If you take being an attribute of the object, when the object dies, its being is gone. If you've done a viveka between the being, the existence, and the attribute, the existence and the experience, then what happens is all change, anything objectifiable, comes and goes within being. Being is the constant. See the difference? Okay, so now, how to differentiate? What's the one major teaching, the different teaching methodology, all of them will do this, but that viveka has to take place really by differentiating being from what you experience. You know? Besides drikdrisha, the seer-seeing differentiation, which is kind of the staple for doing this in regards to yourself, it's one of the first things that has to be done, is making a viveka, a differentiation between the rising and setting of all of your experience. Being able to recognize that all experience rises and sits within being itself, within being, which is consciousness. That can just be done by the drisha, the seer-seeing differentiation. But there's the other one that is often used for this is exactly that, what Swamiji uses with a clay pot. That clay, the clay pot, is when you break the clay pot into shards, the shards are. When you break the shards into, you know, clay dust, the clay dust is. When you break the clay dust into molecules, the molecules are. When you break the molecules into atoms, and you break those into quarks, you go on and on. There is no variation, no variance in the being, in the experience of being, or in the denotation of being. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. Then the question comes, you know, any nama-rupa can be divided infinitely within Maya, in this creation. So that's why Swamiji will say names within names within names. There is an infinite regress and the infinite ability to divide any nama-rupa. This is the logic. As long as a name and form takes up space, right, it can be divided. If it takes up space, it can be divided. Right? If it doesn't take up any space, then it's not there for objectification. Right? If something takes up no space, right, it doesn't take up any space, you have no means of objectification. Mental space also. The vrittis in the mind are also space. They have dimension. They can be objectified. So vritti takes up subtle space. Okay. So anything that takes up space is subject to division. It has a right side, a left side, a top, or the bottom. Let's just look at the top. Let's look at the bottom. Let's divide it. Let's quarter it. You know? And so with your sense perception, with the means of knowledge you have available to you, all you can do in your analysis is go deeper and deeper into smaller and smaller bits or bigger and bigger bits of those of nama-rupa, which can be objectified. You can't get to the substance that is there, which is in the end must be free of nama-rupa. Because nama-rupa, name and form, can always be divided. And so you can't say that the substance of one form is the two forms which make it up. Right? No, because you can't say that the substance of a given form is the two forms or three forms that make it up. Like, for instance, I say the substance, the truth of this lamp is the pole and the base and the light and the cord. those, if I say that's what the lamp is, then I can go into any one given member and then divide that into names and forms. And then I can go into those names and forms and divide those. All we're doing is talking, we're never getting outside of the form. We're using forms to define forms. So that's why we say, this lamp is really not a thing. It's not a vastu. It's not a thing. It's a conglomerate, right? And so we're defining things as what they are, what is their essence, by dissecting it into smaller things. Like this lamp is, well, it's really just the base and the cord. It's made of many different things. So any given thing, if we define it by going into smaller forms of which make the conglomerate, then again, we're not even touching the essence of what is actually there.
Like a cell.
Mm-hmm. So imagine, say if you have, you imagine the smallest form. Just imagine, you don't know what that is, but imagine the smallest form. Again, you've got the smallest form. Then you have to say, what is inside that form? What is that form made of? Yeah? What is that form made of? You know, and so then imagine taking off the form to look inside, to see what is actually there, to see what is the content of that form. In the end, the content has to be formless. Otherwise, you're just defining it by more names and forms. In the end, to get to the content has to be formless, or it's not the content. It's another name and form which has a content, right? Mm. So in all of your experience, if you take off, imagine taking off the form to recognize the content, but that content that you're recognizing is not able to have a form because you've taken the form off. So what is left? What is left that goes all the way through from the pot to the cork, right? From the clay pot to the clay cork. What is left is only the clay, if we use that as a drishtanta. So say if I go from your being in terms of body, mind, sense organs, what is going to be left in the end is what is going to be there as the anuvritti all the way through is going to be your being. And what is the one and only thing that doesn't have the ability to be objectified because it's not a form is your being. Your being is the one thing in every aspect of experience that can't be modified or taken away. Do you see what I'm saying? All the way through the analysis is simply your being. When we do the Drishta Viveka, what are you left with? It's just me, my being. It's the one thing that we can never get rid of. In fact, if you look every time when you're doing a contemplation or a meditation, anything, we enjoy that. We enjoy just being me, my being, which is actually consciousness. Why, you have to understand, when I say my being is consciousness, consciousness also can't be objectified. You have to think, not consciousness as a knower. Consciousness as the very nature of being. Being is consciousness, consciousness is being. Knowership and all of that totally depends upon an upadhi. Depends on a mind. It depends upon sense organs. Consciousness, yourself, that is right here. If you just kind of recognize yourself, your own being, as you just sit here, the me, that be is me is self-evident. There's nothing objective, there's nothing illumining it or objectifying it. My being, nothing's illumining, nothing's objectifying it, I am. We say it's self-evident, it's self-luminous. The self-evident nature of being is consciousness. The self-luminous nature of being is consciousness. Being and consciousness are one and the same thing. Neither one can be objectified. Consciousness can't objectify being. Being can't objectify consciousness. Consciousness is not an object in the world to look at. Being is not an object in the world to look at. And yet everything in the world enjoys being and enjoys consciousness. It enjoys being as it is, it is, it is, it is, it is, you are, I am. in the language, am, is, are. Everything is. Goodness, body is, the space is, the world is, you are. Everything, without exception, on every level. On every level of your mind, your vrittis, your imaginations, your moods, your emotions, everything that takes place equally enjoys isness, not one side more than the other, because it's like one play. Similarly, everything enjoys knownness. Remember, consciousness is not a knower. So consciousness, in reference to the known, to things that I'm not identified with, anything I'm not identified with, it is known. You know, with knowledge, you can say, because we usually don't make this viveka, we usually say, all of this is known. Everything I experience is known, and I am the knower. That's a thoughtless aviveka, totally aviveka. You are all the known. I am the knower. But then with the Dhritarishtra, we say, oh, wait a minute. You are all the known. This body is also known. Right? Nothing in your experience through your sense perception is not known. All is known. This body is equally known through your sense perception, so it's included in the known. My sense organs are known, included in the known. My thoughts are known. The ahankara is known. My knowledge and ignorance are known. Everything within maya, everything within duality, is included in the known. Then, I am also known. Consciousness is also known. How? Not as an object, but as self-evident being. So self-evident being is the very nature, you know, is the really the adhishtana, the very basis, the very truth of everything that I experience. But it hasn't been differentiated. So that self-evident sat, that self-evident being that I am, in reference to the mind, I am the conscious being, the knower, in reference to the mind and the sense organs, and the body, because I've identified myself with the body. But in reference to everything else, it is and it is known. That's the sat-chit. The isness and the knownness and one are one and the same thing.
You make it sound like a self-knowing entity, a self-knowing presence, kind of.
It is. So not self-knowing, because we can say that, but knowing involves knower known. Mm-hmm. So what if you say self-evident being, self-luminous being, being which is consciousness, sat which is chit, chit which is sat, right? And so here, just to tie this up with the verse again, when... when he says, "This my existence, my being, is my swarupa. Right? My being is my swarupa. It's not a quality. If it's a quality, then it's going to be belonging to a substantive. Right? There's dvaita there. So I am not a quality of something else. I am the substantive. I am the very, it is my very nature. There's no subject-object duality or attribute-substantive relationship. It is my very nature. It's not a dharma. It's like the spaceness of space, right? Space doesn't have the quality of spaceness. It is space. Existence doesn't have, the being doesn't have the quality of being. It is being. So when you say, I am, that amness doesn't superimpose onto an object. I am the amness. My amness is not a quality of something else. The amness that I am, I am. And so, because there is no being other than me, because you can't objectify existence, nor does anything really enjoy being, because everything comes into being and goes out of being. Everything that you experience within duality is bordered by non-existence. That's why we don't see a stable existence, because nothing in the creation has a stable existence from its own standpoint. It comes into being and goes out of being, so it's bordered by non-existence. So I give that as an attribute. I give my being as an attribute to everything I experience, and then everything comes into being and goes out of being. So being itself is finite. But I've said, no, your being is not an attribute of anything. It is the very swarupa, right? And itself cannot be objectified to be coming and going. So therefore, it itself is not a jati. It's not a species that can be differentiated from other things, nor is it any type of a dharma, an attribute. And so the next verse, that's basically what he says in this verse. In the next verse, he's going to go into bringing that sat into chit, to where you recognize that the sat is the chit. That's the next verse.
Maybe this is an appropriate time to ask, but I heard regarding this verse as being a refutation of the Nyayikas?
Nyayikas. And Vaisheshikas.
What is that? Who are they?
To really tell you well, I have to review them, but I can tell you in general. But the Vaisheshikas and the Nyayikas, these are two darshanas, two schools of thought. They have what are called padartas. So like one has 16, one has 8. I don't remember which is which. The Nyayika and the Vaisheshikas go together. The Nyayika is more the logic. The Vaisheshika puts more emphasis on the padartas. The padartas are looking at a list of the 16 existent realities in the creation. So they take this manifest creation and they divide it into 16 existent entities, something like that, and those will have attributes. So I can't remember what they all are, but that's why he's differentiating it, because the Vaisheshikas are extreme dualists, because they look at this creation and say, okay, if we analyze this creation, what are the real padartas? What are the 16 categories of existent things, which comprise this creation? The Atma, the self, is one of them. It's one of 16 categories. Yeah. I'm sorry, but to give you more, I have to. I actually teach this at school for years, but every time I have to go back and review it because I don't remember.
If you just practically working on it, say you're really stuck on some.
Time for a little tea break.
You're stuck on something, and so you want to use this as a practical way to get unstuck, to stop identifying with thing. So you just start dividing it, making it bigger or smaller, and see how far you get, and you find out that. And you just keep working. Is that help you get unstuck?
I would say, I don't really use that one to help me get unstuck. But that particular methodology is used to, when we use sat itself, is to show that this manifest creation, which has an objective reality, a shared reality that we all agree upon, right, like we're all agreed that we're in this room, that this is a rug, etc. That's a shared reality. How is it that this shared reality that we experience is nothing but the existence which I am? Right? And so this particular prakriya is what helps me bridge the gap the gap between the very important recognition that any vritti you have, any thought that you have, is nothing but sat. That a thought rises in consciousness, right? Is sustained in consciousness, resolves into consciousness. It's nothing but consciousness. You can say with any vritti, it is known, it is known, it is known. Everything in the vritti. So if I have you imagine a meadow, you have a meadow, a complex meadow imagination, you can see that everything in the meadow is known, enjoys consciousness. Everything in the meadow enjoys being the being, which is me. That we can get easily.
Okay.
But then we have a problem of taking the fact, that fact, which we can easily grasp, that we don't really experience anything. I mean, that the pervasion of such chit in a vritti. Now, but how do we go from the vritti to this?
Yeah.
Because it's obvious to me that the vritti is subjective, and that it's pervaded by the sat-chit, which I am. But it's not obvious to me that in this empirical reality of which this body, mind, sense organs is an empirical part, that this is the same, has the same relationship to me as the vritti. Right? That there is, in fact, when we go out and say, well, yeah, but the vritti is obviously subjective, it's obviously maya, it's obviously mitya, you know, that's clear, but it isn't clear that this is mitya. Right. And so now what we have to do is go out into shared empirical reality that we call vyavahara, vyavaharika, the vyavaharika satyam. Vyavaharika satyam means empirical reality. Right? Empirical reality is shared reality.
It's the horse versus unicorn.
How is this mitya?
Yeah.
How is this mitya? How can I say that this really, even though it's very true in terms of my experience, but what I'm experiencing is a vritti, how do I know that this is nothing but sat-chit? And so this example, when we're dealing with sat, the examples that we're, you know, breaking down the objects and analyzing the objects to show that there's a satya mitya in reference to existence, it's a way to negate this empirical reality that we experience in terms of having a different sat, a being of its own, where sat becomes a really truly a dharma of this, a quality. So that's what this is.
Okay. Yeah.
But when I'm trying to objectify, say I'm caught in an experience, you know, there's different levels of ways of working with that. One, and some of it's inner child work to say, well, what is it I really am wanting? What am I, is I'm really needing? And talking to the little ones inside. That's one thing. But another, when you've taken care of whatever might be the childhood complexes involved, is where is the ananda really? Where is ananda?
Okay.
Where does it really exist? Does my mind think that I can really get it here? And then you do some vichara. You do some analysis of the situation. You know, especially when you find yourself being twisted inside by your desire for something to be a certain way. Then you have to, it can be very, very helpful to gain some objectivity, you know.
When you use the word ananda, you mean well-being, right?
The well, the nature of yourself, the wholeness of yourself. Is it something that requires a situation to be a particular way? And does it really even exist in that situation, you know? Because sometimes you really... It's all right and natural to have this desire and that desire, and some of the desires are just fabricated. They're just imaginations that you've watered. You know what I mean? It's like you've been tending the imagination. You know, and so it becomes, the more you tend an imagination or desire, the more real it becomes, and the more dependent you become on it. You know, and so. And a lot of times those imaginations are something that you've gained in this life because of whatever fantasies you've had. It doesn't have anything to do with your prarabdha.
Yeah.
That's why it's always good if you find yourself in some strong desire, you can have a prayer, Bhagawan, if this is the prarabdha, that's fine, and if it's not, that's fine also. You know, you have to objectify it and let go of it and have more shraddha in Ishwara. That's why Ishwara is so important. To understand that this life is, there's a prarabdha that's unfolding. And you can have superimposed your own. Oh, no. Arjun can handle that.
She needs to sleep as the class is finished.
No, because she sleeps on my bed, too. You've got choices there, little girl.
What is it,
Tibbs?
She
wants to
be fed. You want anything hand-fed, Tibby?
It's okay.
Boy, does she have you guys trained.
First, I was just going to say, yeah.
Now.
Something important happening. Anyway, everybody, let's say a prayer. That's good enough for them.
Thank you.
That's great.
Om.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.